One thing we know for sure about Alzheimer's disease right now, there is no cure. But David Snowden says there's still plenty we can do to prevent the disease. Snowden began the now famous Nunn study back in 1986 and has recently written a book, Aging with Grace, about the experience. He told Steve Paulson how the ongoing Nunn study works.
For the last 10 years, about once a year, nearly 700 Catholic sisters throughout the United States are mentally and physically examined. And we also gather information from the convent archives about their early and middle life. And when each of the sisters dies, they each agree to brain donation. So we can put all this information to look at how early and middle life and late life factors relate to mental and physical function, as well as brain activity and brain diseases, as well as longevity.
It's remarkable that all of these women are willing to donate their brains to science.
Well, I think they all have been touched by Alzheimer's disease. It could be a former mentor or teacher who's an older sister who may have had Alzheimer's, or a friend or family member. And most importantly, they're the school sisters of Notre Dame, so they're a teaching order, and they really believe in the power of education. And that's what we're about, trying to understand what we can do to live a longer and better life with good mental and physical function. So we get along really well with the sisters.
I know you have gotten to know many of these nuns, and in some cases they have become friends, and they've actually stocked your room in the convent with beer. Has that been important to do this study, to really connect with them at a personal level?
Yeah, it's very unusual in science and medicine to get close to the people you're studying. And the very first Notre Dame I met, Sister Carmen Berg, 15 years ago, she told me that I really would have to get to know the sisters and let them get to know me, and that we really couldn't treat them as research subjects. And that was the best advice I ever got on doing human research. And it's been a wonderful part of it.
Now, one thing I find fascinating about your study is the importance of what we all do early in life. I mean, I can understand the value of being active and having an intellectual life when we're 70 or 80 years old, but you're really saying that what we do when we're 10 years old and 20 years old are important down the line.
Absolutely. That brain, the first 12, 13 years of life, is really undergoing sculpting. It's developing, and parts of the brain are taken out if certain things are not in the environment. If your parents aren't talking to you, then it would appear that you don't need language, and so the language part of the brain may be muted or may be sculpted out. I mean, it literally, there's parts of the brain that are sculpted out that as you get closer to sexual maturation. And after age 12, there's still some modeling and some changes in the brain, probably up into the 20s. And then it doesn't necessarily get set in concrete, but it's kind of like, you know, wet cement. It gets pretty somewhat inflexible. And so that early year, those early decades are extremely important.
I want to get back to this question of what people can do with their children up until they're 10 or 15 years old, because I'm guessing that virtually all kids talk with their parents or their peers. And I guess I'm wondering how important it is to raise children in a particular way so that they develop the right kind of brain.
Well, our linguist for the study, Dr. Susan Kemper, she says that the best way to build good linguistic skills and good vocabulary is by reading to your children.
You mentioned the importance of diet. Do you know whether certain foods are particularly important to eat to help protect our brains?
Well, this is a growing field looking at nutrition, but Alzheimer's is a brain-wasting disease. You know, parts of the brain, the thinking parts of the brain, are actually damaged and destroyed, and the brain actually shrinks. It's called atrophy, and it's this damage to the brain and death of the brain tissue that causes the symptoms of Alzheimer's. So it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that if you've got a brain-wasting disease, you probably shouldn't nutritionally deprive the tissue. And there may be particular nutrients, vitamin E people have looked at. There's some evidence it may be protective in Alzheimer's disease. The nutrient we've looked at is folic acid, which is a B vitamin found in spinach, and now it's found in breakfast cereals and multivitamin pills. And folic acid is very important in the development of the brain during fetal development. Our study and several other studies are now suggesting that folic acid may also be important in the maintenance of the brain. I'm fairly certain that there's other nutrients that are also important in protecting that brain from being damaged in Alzheimer's. So the bottom line is probably eating a multivitamin pill every day, but also eating lots of fruits and vegetables. There's lots of protective factors for a variety of diseases in fruits and vegetables. So, there's some of these truisms like, eat your vegetables, that I guess they didn't get handed down generation to generation if they didn't have some merit.
Have you figured out how important emotions are in all of this, and particularly people who suffer from depression?
It's been known for some time that people who have clinical depression, untreated depression, have a high risk of stroke and heart disease. At the other end of the continuum, hostility and pathologic anger, also those people have a high risk of heart disease and stroke. Our data and others are now starting to suggest that kind of our everyday emotions that we may be expressing may also be playing a role. What we've now reported a few months ago in a medical journal was that the sisters who were very hopeful, that those sisters lived about 10 years longer than the sisters who wrote very nice autobiographies, but they were more like a business letter with not much emotion. What we think is it's kind of part of the attitude of the sister that when they do have stresses, we all have stresses, even nuns have stresses daily, that when they have stressful circumstances and the heart starts pounding and the blood pressure raises and there's lots of changes in the blood that would increase the chance of having a stroke or a heart attack, that when people who are optimistic and positive in their emotions, that when they do have stress, they still have those reactions, but they come back to normal. Their blood pressure and heartbeat and blood clotting and so forth will return back to normal quicker because they've got a kind of a foundation by which to kind of put that stress into context.
Did you find that the nuns who were especially social, who really liked hanging out with other people, talking with other people, were they less likely to come down with symptoms of Alzheimer's?
That's a hard one to study. I mean, for example, a couple years ago, a European study suggested that people who travel and who knit might have a low risk of Alzheimer's disease.
Who knit.
And, I'm sure you could think of some complicated neurologic way in which knitting, activated certain parts of the brain. But people, as they start to develop Alzheimer's, before they get the diagnosis years ahead, there's changes in the mind and the thinking and in their feelings. And so that they can, slow down their knitting and not travel. It's hard to travel and knit when you are developing Alzheimer's or when you have it. And one of our sisters, Sister Mathia, who was 104, she knit a pair of mittens every day. And I thought about, if you really thought knitting prevented Alzheimer's, then was it the knitting that she did when she was 6 years old or when she was 104? Again, these are kind of lifelong habits that we develop. So I don't think knitting prevents Alzheimer's, but I think Alzheimer's can cause people to become socially isolated because it becomes embarrassing if you can't follow a conversation and be part of the conversation. So a lot of people will withdraw as they develop Alzheimer's, withdraw from the social world. That just makes matters worse. One of my favorite sisters, Sister Nicolette, she has a sister who has the symptoms of Alzheimer's, who's also a nun, Sister Ursula, and several times a day she goes up and spends time with Ursula trying to keep her connected in the world of, what day is it today and what did you have for breakfast and trying to keep her engaged. And it takes a lot of patience from both Nicolette and Ursula to do this, but it's all part of trying to stay connected. And therapies for Alzheimer's patients, in many ways, it may not change the biology, but it's trying to find something that they do that they can find some reward in, whether it's playing a piano or dancing. Or I know of some people with Alzheimer's who can't talk really, but they can still sing the old songs. So taking pride and being part of the world is important for all of us, and I think it's even more important as these brain diseases like Alzheimer's start to kind of chip away at your human features, human characteristics that we value so much.
Steve Paulson spoke with David Snowden about Aging with Grace,